Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
G'day, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where each episode we gush and crap on about our favourite superhero team, the Doom Patrol.
We ooze occasionally, don't we? Anyway, I am Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks, where you can also be found at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. If you are an email, you will find us there. If you're not, people can't find us there, but emails can. We are on Facebook, and we also have the site mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, which was a wonderful little Doom Patrol blog, and then we teamed up with them, and Doug Savisha, who runs that blog, kindly puts up posts to support our show and has all the little pictures of the stuff we talk about, which makes the podcast more visual, which is really good. And many of our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and I think all of them are on podbean.com.
Correct. Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at avantgarve, where you can also find our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDpod.
Hello, humans.
And as always, we are proudly brought to you by comicosity.com.
Yeah, and this week on Comicosity, I was happy to find their, I think it's a weekly column called The Honor Roll.
Oh, yes.
It's not about, yes, but that each of the contributors on the site, they pick out one comic from the previous week and have a little gush about it themselves. And so there's about seven or eight comics on this list, Doom Patrol number 8 on there twice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's some good picking there.
That is some good picking. Yeah, and that's Doug is one of those pickers right there.
Oh, he's got such good taste. He really does. Yeah, and
Pete Busa or Bussa is the other one. So nice.
Yeah, nice. Tidy.
Yeah. Tidy. Excellent. Yeah, so that's what's happening at Comicosity. But anyway, Mike, how was your week in comics and things that aren't comics?
More things that aren't comics than anything else. Haven't touched the To Read pile. Obviously, I read Issue 8 of Volume 6. But no, last weekend I took my darling Kylie to Melbourne for a...
Oh, what?
Yeah, a bit of a trip away for a belated birthday present because her... or well, I don't know if it's her all-time favourite, but she's a fan of true crime podcasts. And there's one called My Favourite Murder, which is touring out here at the moment. So we went and saw the show in Melbourne. And that was a... interesting thing. Basically, they, you know how you and I cover an issue of Doom Patrol each?
Yes.
Well, these ladies, they pick a random murder in history and they talk about it.
Ah, sweet.
And, it's a little bit weird hearing about murders of real people that are kind of played for laughs. They don't do it at the expense of the victims, but it's more like a whole bunch of what the fuck when you hear about how insane the murderers are. Yeah. So, not exactly my taste in podcasts. But I tell you what, I have well and truly banked up some serious boyfriend brownie points with that trip away. So, I'm golden for quite some time.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I don't know what it is about murders. My wife and daughter love watching, I think, on Foxtel, Serial Killer Sunday.
Oh, wow.
And shows like Wives with Knives.
Oh, my God.
They love it. They love it.
Well, I have to admit, the majority of the audience at this show were women. There were very few men there. So...
Tread carefully, Mike.
Yeah, you too, mate. I'd never even heard of Wives with Knives until now. But, Melbourne, I'd never been to Melbourne before. My first time there ever. And I've got to say, I really like it. I'm a big fan of Melbourne City. So I'm quite keen to get back there.
So, many people are. Mm. Many people. Mm.
Yeah.
So, it is, of course, home to my favourite comic shops in Australia. But you didn't get there, did you?
I did not. Paul was very kind in sending me lots of text messages about multiple comic shops. And I got close to one of them, but we just didn't have the time to stop and go into any of them. So next time.
Next time.
And we were staying probably like one block away from one of them. But, you know, next time. Next time. Anyway, Paul, how's your week been?
I'll talk about a comic I read. I got from the library it's a fairly recent trade paperback, Midnighter and Apollo from DC. Yeah, this is written by Steve Orlando with art by Fernando Blanco and colored beautifully by Romulo Fajardo Jr. But I'll just chuck out some of this is it's hitting the sweet spots with DC continuity. So you could read this and never know that New 52 happened and Rebirth. Wow. It feels like it's just picking up stuff from pre-Flashpoint continuity and running with it. So okay. I'll just chuck out some of the things that are featured in it. So obviously you've got Midnighter and Apollo, Henry Bendix, they're the man who created both of them and they're sort of evil mastermind arch enemy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. How about this? The Morzier.
Wait. From Sandman.
No. Another comic that has man in it. Hitman.
Oh my God. That's right. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I have to read
the
that.
The Lords
now.
Of the Gun.
Holy shit.
The Ace of Winchesters.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, and getting more mainstream DC, Neron.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And an old one, the most flamboyant gay stereotype character DC ever had, Extrano.
I've somehow missed Extrano.
Oh, you missed him, okay. There's a DC miniseries called Millennium. It's one of their events.
Oh, yes.
Often regarded as not one of their best events. And they spun out of that a series called The New Guardians, which was sort of the next evolution of people. And there was a whole bunch of characters. And I think there's a Brazilian character called Extrano, who's gay and, pretty stereotyped. But
right.
Yeah, but this comic brings him back and treats him respectfully and makes him cool.
Wow.
And one just for the Aussies, the Tasmanian Devil of the Global Guardians.
Oh, jeez.
Well, in this comic, briefly. So that's Australia's only DC superhero that I can think of. Yeah. So, that was a good read. Bloody good read.
Wow.
So basically, Midnighter and Apollo, they're together again. Apollo gets killed by the Morzier and sent to hell. And the Midnighter has to fight his way through hell to get him back. So,
wow.
Exciting stuff. I highly recommend it. If you like a bit of DC continuity resurfacing, and it's obvious that Steve Orlando does. I mean, he reads the comics we enjoy and thinks about them. So, yeah, some really good continuity mining here. I really dug it.
The Lords of the Gun, that alone has piqued my interest.
Yeah. Wow. You'll enjoy this one.
Okay. Holy shit. I can't believe I'm that excited about a series I've not read.
Yeah. Cool. Anyway, maybe we should go down on Darrington Way.
Let's.
Things are fairly quiet on Darrington Way at the moment. We're sort of between issues. We're between news. There isn't any really big announcements for a little while lately. But one thing that did happen is Nick Darrington and Gerard Way have got together and put together a Spotify playlist for the Doom Patrol with treats for your ears. So you've been looking at this, Mike. What sort of treats are there?
Oh, there's a bit of everything on there. There's some Miles Davis. There's Blitzkrieg Bop by the Ramones. It was Human Fly by the Cramps. What else? It's such a mix. Search and Destroy by Iggy and the Stooges. Golden Brown by the Stranglers.
Oh, I know that one.
There's Los Angeles by Frank Black. There's Living After Midnight by Judas Priest. Tame by the Pixies. The Stone Roses with I Want to Be Adored. I really want to check this whole list out. I don't really use Spotify, but again, my interest is piqued.
Is there any Phil Collins?
Just checking for you, mate. I know you were doesn't look like it, sorry.
And I know Ange will be wondering, is there any men at work?
There is not. There is.
What are the odds? Not.
Although it would have been hilarious if, you know, Down Under appeared on that list.
Yeah.
That would mean that the guys are listening to the show.
But I guess that would be. They're not listening.
Or they've just got good taste.
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe it wasn't about us, it was about the music that they can link to the Doom Patrol.
Maybe, yeah. Okay. I know it's not always about us.
It's not always about us, no.
No, it's not. Wow. But yeah, interesting list. There's a good mix of stuff on there and stuff I've never heard of before, so it's going to be interesting to get into that later.
Cool. Any Venetians?
Not that I can see.
No? Okay. Maybe on the next one. All right.
Yeah, maybe. God. People are going to be going, who are the Venetians? What the hell?
The best thing to ever happen to Oz music in the 80s. Anyway.
Wow, that's a big call. Jeez.
Yeah, I'm picking up that big phone and making that big call.
You sure are, mister. Gosh.
Yeah, they had a great song called So Much for Love, but at school we used to sing So Much for Lunch at the end of lunch. Yeah, good times. Anyway.
Well played, young Hicks. Well played.
Always was a humorist. Is that ticking that I hear, Mike?
That sure is. And look over there, it's the Doom Clock.
Whew.
So yes, as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had came out 1 week ago, issue 8 of volume 6, which we discussed last episode 104, and showed the return of Lotion the Cat and the relationship between him and Casey taking an interesting turn, and the public launch of the Wonder Food shit.
Yeah, I don't think people noticed that incident in the last issue of Doom Patrol. It was didn't stand out at all.
Which one, the public launch or the pussy lovin'?
The pussy lovin'.
Right. Yeah, there wasn't much chatter about it online. Yes, there was. Issue 9 of Volume 6 is, at this stage, scheduled for release on October 4th, just 3 weeks away.
So
they should be back on track by now, surely.
Well, that I think that has actually slipped a week already.
Oh, God, you're kidding me.
Well, I think it's the domino effect of the last issue slipping right. 1 week. Okay. Yeah. But we'll pretend not to notice.
Yep, sure. And this there. Week in Doom Patrol history, thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale for 75 cents on September 15th, 1987, with a cover date of December of that year, was issue 3 of Doom Patrol Volume 2 from Paul Kupperberg, Steve Lytle, Gary Martin, Johnny Workman Jr. and Carl Gafford. This issue was titled The Fire of the Gods and was the finale of the opening story arc of this volume, showing the team saving the world from Kalki and his satellite of doom.
Kalki,
with all his bugs and his chest that went to a different dimension.
Yeah.
And his action figure chair, that's right.
Yeah.
I remember we were saying he would have made a brilliant action figure.
That whole issue was just one big playset with, like, G.I. Joe villains in it.
It was awesome. Yeah. And, yes, we covered this issue and the preceding ones all the way back in episode 26 from July of 2015. Good grief.
That's a long time ago.
It was. It was over 2 years ago. Good Lord. So, yes, you can check that episode out for more. And that is it for the Doom Clock this week.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, hold your breath, make a wish, count to three. Come with me and you'll see a world that's filled with Beatlemania.
Hey, everybody. This is Tim, one of the co-hosts of Beatlemania, the Blue Beetle podcast. Along with my co-host, Jay, we're going to be bringing you everything Blue Beetle, from the Golden Age adventures of Dan Garrett to the Silver Age adventures of a different Dan Garrett to the more recent adventures of Ted Kord and Jaime Reyes. Trust us, we're keeping it blue on the SNG Podcast Network.
And now it's time for Doomsplaining. And this week, we are returning to everyone's favourite part of Volume 2, the Rachel Pollack run.
It is, and some people's favourite.
Yeah, it is. It is. I got to admit, though, we don't hear a lot from those people.
No.
But look, we're working our way through it. We're getting there. We're on the tail end of Pollack's run. And so we'll now be looking at issues 76 and 77. So, Paul, kick us off with issue 76, please.
Okay, 76. It had a cover date of March 1994. But it actually came out on the 1st of February 1994. Cost $1.95, which is a pretty reasonable price. The issue is entitled The Hotel of Lost Light and is written by Rachel Pollack, art by Ted McKeever, lettered by John E. Workman Jr., the legendary letterer of legend, Johnster, and coloured by Stuart Chaffetz, and has a cover by Kyle Baker, which has a sort of dancing beings of light. And I think they are nude, but it is very obscured.
Yes.
And we will find out what they are later in the issue where we talk about people dancing in the sky. Anyway, how did we get here? What are we doing? So those of you who don't know, we jump around in our Doom Patrol coverage. So, you know, one ep we might do, a bit of Volume 2, then we'll do a new issue, and then we might jump to something else. So, you know, we mix it up. So I better give you a previously in Doom Patrol Volume 2. So the Doom Patrol is caught in the firing line between the servants of the Terrace. Is that how you say it, Mike?
Sure.
Okay. And their mortal enemies, the Builders. The Builders are working with a US general on a new Tower of Babel beneath the Pentagon to wipe out nonconformity. In the Doom Patrol headquarters in Violet Valley, the chief is tiring Dorothy out with an imaginary friend therapy session when suddenly the Builders attack. In the midst of their assault, the general reveals that they are there to recover their government-owned property, which is George and Marion, also known as the Bandage People. Okay, carrying on with the issue. A bedraggled man named Elliot sits in a decrepit hotel room. He is being taunted by a desk fan with blades that have faces. That's unusual. Yeah. The fan calls him the last of the Terrace, but he says, not the last, others. And the fan asks him if he still hopes, still believes in the prophecy. Leaving his room, he is greeted by a bellhop, life-size doll man, and a woman with a rose for a face. And the woman tells him that his changing is over, that this is the end. Welcome to the hotel, probably the Hotel of Lost Light that we heard in the title. Yeah. Meanwhile, in Violet Valley, which is the headquarters of the Doom Patrol now, in Rainbow Estates, the Builders are trying to capture George and Marion. Although exhausted from her therapy, Dorothy managed to summon an imaginary friend, Pretty Miss Dot, but she is immediately seized by the Builders, we'll call it a building golem. Mm. It's a building that walks and attacks people. And Cliff and Coagula, who's Kate Godwin, new member of the Doom Patrol, they enter the fray just as the golem starts firing girders and Kate dissolves them as they strike. The general calls a retreat and Kate startles Cliff with a big hug, but the chief demands immediate explanation from George and Marion. How come the general wants them back? And with some encouragement from Kate and Cliff, the bandage couple begin their story, which starts in Amsterdam many years ago. They were living in a squat when a strange man called The Contract recruited them to Operation Tongues, a special secret project. They were flown to Washington, and instead of being important people on a project, they were transferred deep under the Pentagon to work on the new Tower of Babel. forced to work near a huge monster called the White City, their bodies were painfully stripped away, leaving nothing but energy, which is ready to be wrapped in bandages to contain it. After years of slavery, George and Marion saw their one chance to escape that coincided with the nanite attack on reality, which is in issue 65 of this run of the Doom Patrol, which we covered in episode 88, which caused the bosses of the slaves to run off to join the fight. George and Marion tried to make their way out, and they encountered an old man called Elliot, who is manacled and blindfolded. He asked them to remove his blindfold, and this allowed him to morph his body, growing wings and breasts. And he kissed each of them, which made George and Marion's bandages come to life, able to be replenished when they're used. They fled with as many slaves as they could, but Elliot never made it out. And the last they saw of him, he was being dragged away to a strange hotel. The Hotel of Lost Light, perhaps.
Maybe.
Eventually... George and Marion found their way to Violet Valley, Rainbow Estates, and Charlie, the inner child, who's the doll that lives in Rainbow Estates, he urged them inside. And then soon, the Doom Patrol moved in as well, which is how they met.
Great.
Anyway, after this story, the chief has a plan to fortify the building, and he asks Kate to help. And Cliff is marveling at Kate's ability to roll with the weirdness, but he worries about her. Come on, she doesn't belong here. She's so damn normal. She should be off married somewhere, married and having babies. So Cliff is suddenly a sexist pig. But Marion gently takes Cliff aside for a little chat about Kate, that there's something he quite doesn't know about Kate. Anyway, back at the hotel, Elliot has embarked on asking a series of questions that gives him riddles that he can reinterpret and use to break language open. Sounds legit. And he escapes the hotel and takes the androgynous form that appeared to Dorothy in the previous issue. You know, the man-woman combo with the tattoos and birds and animals and things.
Yep, right on the cover of issue 75, yeah.
Yeah, by Brian Boland. Cliff confronts Kate, indignant that she didn't tell him, and they have an awkward chat, and he said, I thought you knew. What did you think Niles meant when he's called me surgically altered? Cliff says, I don't know, that you'd had a nose job or something. Shit, well, what I want to know is, are you a man or a woman? A woman, obviously. But you used to be a man, right? No, Cliff, no, I was never a man. You had a penis, right? Maybe you chopped it off, but you had one, right? In my book, that makes you a man. Really? Then what about you, Cliff? Do you have a penis? What are you? Maybe we should get this settled once and for all. Who's a man? Who's a woman? What about you, Dr. Calder? Are you a man or a woman? Which is it? And Dr. Calder interrupts them. That's enough, you two. You can squabble with each other later. Right now, we need to organize our defenses. Niles pulls Kate away to coagulate the wall of bandages generated by George and Marion outside, while Charlie raises the sexual spirits into the sky to defend the house, which is happening on the cover. Cliff is freaking out still and needs to step outside, so he insists that they open a hole in the bandages so he can go out. But Kate follows him to calm him down. But before they can hash everything out, the builders return with the building golem, and Cliff shoves Kate aside, taking the full brunt of a devastating blast which shatters his body.
Take a drink.
Take a drink.
Take a big drink.
Yeah. Yeah, so Mike... Where does this issue hit you?
It's not bad. I mean, it's cool to see George and Marion's backstory because it's a cool origin story, I guess. And, you know, they've mentioned Amsterdam before, like when we first meet them in issue 68, which we covered back in episode 94, and when they had to go and face the cleaners underneath Amsterdam, and George and Marion were like, oh, it's great to be home again. Let's go fight this weird monster. So, yeah, their backstory was cool. So, yeah, it was cool to see Elliot come forth and, you know, reveal themselves. The whole thing with the Hotel of Lost Light...
It didn't seem that hard to escape, did it?
No. It's just babble some gibberish.
A few minutes work asking questions and repeating the answers in different forms, and you're out.
You know,
yeah.
Mess around with grammar for a bit, and you're free.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I'm still not completely sold on McKeever's art.
Yeah, here's my feeling about it. I think McKeever is a great artist, but this is not the right story for him and probably not the right comic for him, title. Mm. Like, the stuff that I think he's worked best with is, like, he's really good at mood, and I've seen that used in historical settings, like, Victorian London and things like that, and it's really, you know, it sets mood and tone. It's really well suited to horror, but mm-hmm. where it doesn't work very well in this book is there's action elements, and his action is always unclear and very, you know, everything is kind of impressionistic, and when you're doing an action scene, you sort of, it's nice to know what's happening and not yeah. see it through yeah. sort of a haze. And the book is very sort of dark, I mean, but pretty much that's how you've got to colour this art, because it's so shadowy and heavy, and, you know, there's so much ink in it that if you do...
There's a lot of ink.
Yeah, if you do light colours against it, it just looks bizarre and doesn't work. So, I find... I mean, it probably works the best for the Elliot stuff, but where the Doom Patrol is in action and fighting, it's like you're seeing it through a haze of gauze. It's quite unclear. And, like, the last page is Cliff getting blasted, but, you know, you're not sure if he's actually getting blasted. Do you have to take a drink, or is it just, you know, the murk of the art, you know? Because most of the characters in this look like they're being blasted at any given time. Anyway.
So, yeah, it's...
But I think the dialogue in this is probably the best that Pollock's done. It's really strong, the dialogue.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised by Cliff's reaction to his learning about Kate.
Yeah, well, I feel like they're sort of squeezing Cliff into this this role so that Kate can have her speech, rather than this is the real Cliff that would say this. So, you know, Cliff, I don't think Cliff has ever said anything sexist about women should be having babies, and, you know, that's what someone should be having as a normal life, you know?
Yeah.
He hasn't been around normal... since 1963 or something.
Yeah, he should be used to things that are different.
Yeah, and people that are different, and people that don't conform. So,
yeah.
But I mean, I thought the back and forward between them was very strong and very cool, and, you know, even a bit of humour there about that. I thought you meant you'd had a nose job, and she said that too.
Yeah. And I like her call about, you know, you're a robot man, but do you have a penis? And, oh, hang on, you don't. So does that really make you a man?
Yeah.
So that was a nice call out there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, overall, it's an okay issue in the middle of a bizarre run.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do you want to take us into the next issue?
I suppose I better. Because it might clear some things up or might make them worse. So, yes, Doom Patrol number 77, cover date of April 1994, but went on sale March 1st of that year for $1.95. The title is The Witness Tree, and the 25 pages are worked on by Rachel Pollack on the words, Ted McKeever on the art, Johnny Workman Jr. returns for letters, and Stuart Chavetz is again on the colours. And another cover by Kyle Baker. And you can pretty much take a drink before you even open this one up.
You so can.
I will admit, I do like this cover, though. It's very dramatic.
Cliff's head is actually coming off.
Yeah. He's well and truly messed up, and Kate's there, standing behind him and screaming, looking completely shocked. It's a cool cover.
At first glance, I thought that was Dorothy, but then I realised it was very cartoonish Kate.
Yes. And plus, she ran out after him at the end of last issue, so, yeah. But speaking of which, the action in this one picks up immediately after issue 76 with the team outside DPHQ, where Dorothy is somehow able to understand the gibberish some of the sexually romantic spirits are babbling, and she demands that the chief open the bandage wall surrounding the house so they can go and save Cliff. So the bandage wall opens and Dorothy leads the team out into the battle where Kate is fending off the builders with the wreck that is Cliff nearby. Dorothy calls on Paddle the Sky, but the builders' forces overwhelm the apparition. George and Marion are able to literally wrap up some of their opponents, and Chief yells at them to retrieve just Cliff's head. Leave the other parts there. After which the team narrowly escape to the safety back behind the bandage wall. Kate carries Cliff's head into the Chief's lab, where he announces that he'll begin building a new body for Robot Man. But suddenly, Cliff puts his foot down, metaphorically, and demands that if he's going to get a new body, he's going to have a say in how it looks and works. Niles ponders a question of who's actually in control of this body, considering he has to build it, yet Cliff has to use it, but Cliff yells at him to cut the crap and get on with it. The Chief begrudgingly accepts Cliff's terms and speeds away in his car to begin his work. Once they're alone, Cliff and Kate have a deep and meaningful, confiding in each other that they prefer to be different, and discussing Kate's transition into a woman. Cliff then quietly asks her to watch over Niles as he builds a new body, fearing that Chief will do something underhanded, like putting another failsafe switch in it, similar to the one that was revealed back in issue 57 when the Chief's heel turn and insane plans were revealed, which we covered back in episode 82. God, that was a good issue.
Yeah.
That bastard.
Yeah.
Anyway, Cliff answers that she'll do her best to stop Niles if needed. Elsewhere in the house, Niles, George, Marion, Dorothy, and Charlie the Living Doll witness a bright portal opening, and suddenly Elliot the Tiresiae appears before them, seeking their assistance and offering to tell the history of what came before the Builders broke their truce. Gazing into Elliot's eyes, the team is shown an ancient world long before history, evolution, or even creation. The world itself created the Tiresiae, agents of the world's own knowledge, who themselves created a language of grammar and categories. Eventually, the Tiresiae split into male and female forms, with the men forming their own language that divided the world and renaming themselves as the Builders. It was these Builders who enslaved the Tiresiae to erect their Tower of Babel, but war broke out and the tower was destroyed by Songs of Transformation. The survivors from both sides eventually agreed to a truce, with the Builders hiding themselves and sleeping within the tower ruins, and the Tiresiae retreating to a place unreachable by humans. Eons pass, and out of curiosity, Elliot visited the Earth in human form, horrified to discover the Builders had been awakened and had begun their work to rebuild the tower beneath the Pentagon. And it was here that Elliot was eventually captured and imprisoned, and he remained trapped there in his weakened human form until George and Marion came to the rescue, which we saw in the previous issue. So after these revelations, Niles suddenly snaps out of his daze and remembers that, hey, he needs to build Cliff's new body. And soon he's back in the lab under the watchful eyes of Kate. As the work nears completion, the new robotic body convulses wildly as the neuron simulator links developed an electrical blockage. Suddenly, Kate announces that she can fix the problem by dissolving this blockage thanks to her powers and her computer sensitivity, or whatever you call it. Her weird ability she can communicate with computers, which we've only really seen once before.
Mm.
Anyway, before long, the all-new, all-different Robot Man strides into the kitchen before the rest of the team. Dorothy whispers to Kate, "Couldn't you have made him just a little more handsome?" To which Kate replies, "We just did what he wanted, honey." Suddenly, Elliot, the Tiresiae, walks through the wall and announces that they must summon the last Tiresiae, a man and a woman merged together as a new Tiresias. George turns to Marion and comments, "What do you think? We're kind of joined at the knot anyway." But Elliot stops them, saying, "No, there is a far better choice," turning to Kate and Cliff. Robot Man's shoulders slumps as he says, "Oh man, don't I ever get a break." Ah, Cliff, you poor bastard.
Wow.
What did you think of this one, Paul?
Well, I mean, it immediately proves me wrong by having bright colours throughout. So, you know, most of the action in this, well, is in, well, the setting for most of this is the kitchen of the Doom Patrol headquarters. I like Cliff's new look, I must say. It's very... it's like a combat khaki tank look. It's very, very blocky and, you know.
I kind of like how he's got almost like this crown of thorns thing going on around his head.
Yeah.
It's like the banner that goes around the top of his skull, and they've got the little, I don't know what you'd call them, nails or rivets or something that stick around and stick outside of it. And I really like that for some reason. It looks really cool.
It reminds me of G.I. Robot, if you're familiar with that old DC character.
I am not, but I'll take your word
for it. He's from Weird War Stories and things like that, I believe.
Okay.
Just a little bit reminiscent of that. But he sort of has exposed pipes and things, which are... Yeah, but like when Kate's fixing him, it looks like she's reaching up his butt or something.
A little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. But, I mean...
I have to say...
Yeah.
Despite what I said before about McKeever's art, I like his art better in this issue. And particularly the panel where it focuses in on Elliot's eyes as Elliot is retelling the history of the war.
Yeah.
And at the bottom of page 14, it's just a close-up of Elliot's eyes. That's probably my favourite panel out of both these issues.
Yeah, well, we're getting these very sort of cartoonish broad stroke characters, and then suddenly there's this zoom in, and it's very, very detailed and accomplished, and, you know, these eyes look real, you know. Looks like something you'd see P.K. Russell do in Sandman or...
Yeah, it made me think of Sandman when I saw that panel.
Yeah.
It's really detailed and bright and colourful. It's really cool.
Yeah, very good. I mean, the backstory that Teresa or whatever we're saying. Yeah.
However you want to say
it. Yeah, I don't know how I want to say it. But I'm a bit over flashbacks at this point in the Doom Patrol. I kind of want some here and now. You know?
Yeah.
But I like the continuation of Kate and Cliff and their sort of, you know, Cliff is understanding now and a lot more respectful and, treating Kate normally again rather than, you know, being outraged that she's kept something from him and, you know. So, yeah, I think it's a really good way to give people a good understanding of transgender issues in these comics.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite characters in Kate in the Doom Patrol. And I like that, you're right, Cliff and Kate are building this relationship and that they've both got in common the fact that their bodies have been through so much change. Cliff sometimes against his own will and as a result of battle and lots of damage. Sending us all drunk, and Kate through her own choice and being happy with her own appearance and with her own life. So really interesting dynamics there between the two of them, which is something I do love their relationship in this part of Volume 2.
Yeah. It's definitely, I think it's the highlight of this story particularly.
Yeah, for sure. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next issue when they merge together.
Yeah.
To become the new Tiresias.
Yeah. Looking forward to that.
It's such a weird story in this. And that's saying something, considering everything else we've seen the patrol go through.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I am enjoying this arc. I think... Rachel Pollack's writing is much more assured and seems to be much more her own voice now.
Yes.
Rather than sort of, I think there's a bit of Morrison emulation at the start, but, probably a deliberate choice to sort of bridge into what she wanted to do rather than just, you know, cold turkey going to something completely new. But
I think she was probably easing herself and the readers into, you know, her domain.
Yeah. And working with a much smaller Doom Patrol cast now, like Rebus is gone, other characters who fell by the wayside or died during Morrison's run aren't here anymore. Yeah, interesting. So so you've really got like a core team of the Chief, Cliff, Kate and Dorothy, and then you've got George and Marion as sort of auxiliary characters, and then probably the inner child is one step down from them, and that's it.
Yeah, true.
Compared to the cast of thousands in the current volume of the Doom Patrol.
it's still pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we're getting towards the end of this Tiresias Wars story, and I have such mixed feelings about this part of the arc, or part of Volume 2, I should say. There are bits I love about it, and then there are other bits where I'm just like, oh, let's just get it on over and done with.
Yeah.
You know? It's but yeah, we've got 10 issues left in Volume 2, so we're definitely on the tail end of it now.
Yeah. But I think I'm happiest when Kate is, you know, featured front and center in the book. Like, you know, a great new character. And, you know, you want to see more of her. So, you know, the issues where she doesn't appear are disappointments.
Yeah, because you're right. She's one of the strongest elements of Pollack's run. Yeah. Yeah, I think we've doomsplained that as much as possible.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Job well done.
Yeah.
Let's go check out that mailbag of doom.
Okay. And now it's time for the Mailbag of Doom part of the show, where we look in the Mailbag of Doom for any mailbag that has Doom in it, which is emails from you guys or responses on Twitter or Facebook and things like that. So, yeah, I'm probably over-explaining this. I think people get it.
Maybe.
But our question of the week last time, which is being we're going to hear all the responses to now, was... who no longer works in comics that you would love to see return? And we heard from Asang, who is at What Asang Saw on Twitter, and she said, Norm Brayfogle. Him and Aparo defined the 90s Batman style. Oh, yeah, I have to agree with that. It's probably 80s Batman as well, a little bit.
Mm. Some good stuff there. We then heard from Ange, at Dr. Ange 70. And he said, impossible with his eye issues, but John Totalben, his art is incredible.
Ah, Swamping artist, yes.
Yeah, and Ange provided us with some images from, I think it's Mr. Miracle. The costume looks similar to that. I've never read Miracle Man.
Miracle Man. Yeah, no, that's Miracle Man, the Eclipse series by Alan Moore.
There you go.
Yeah, the picture there is Miracle Woman. From Miracle Man.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We heard from Chris, who's from at BTO and Batbooks, which is Batbooks for Beginners, this podcast, and Batman to Oracle. He does little segments in that podcast as well. And Chris said, Alan Brennett wrote some of my favorite Brave and the Bold stories in the 80s. He's the first person who comes to mind. There must be others. And then he thought of one and said, artist Steve Bissett is another. So Steve Bissett worked on Swamp Thing and stuff. Yeah, I think he had a falling out with Alan Moore. Like, but who hasn't? I mean, me and Alan don't talk anyway. but Alan Brennett, he didn't write many comics, but every single one he did was really good. So I think they've just done a collection of his DC work recently. So that's one to look out for.
Cool. We then heard from Cameron Williams at WasGo. And he said, Batman, he stopped working, now he just coasts. It's disappointing.
Yeah, Batman needs to return to working in comics.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Next, we heard from our friend Doug Savisha, D. Savisha on Twitter, if you want to follow him. And he said, Greg Gula loved his work on Hawk and Dove, and you can witness growth and comfort throughout that series. Stellar stuff. And I think he put up a cover by Greg Gula on his blog in the last post. Yeah, Greg Gula was great. He didn't do many comics for DC. And most of it was Hawk and Dove that I recall. But, yeah, he was really good. Yeah, good artist. I'm sure he's doing something that gets him paid more, but it'd be nice to have him working again.
Cool. Ed LaTorre at Dr. Wife Quotes on Twitter said, this is going to hurt a lot of people, but Dwayne McDuffie, I want him back.
Oh, Dwayne McDuffie, creator of Milestone, such a great comic creator. Did some of the best DC animation work too.
Yeah. And I was a huge fan of the Milestone books back in the day. They were so much fun.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not fun, but because they were kind of serious as well, but enjoyable.
Well, they were really well conceived.
Yeah.
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 and bringing diversity to comics that was desperately needed then and still needed today, I would say.
True, yeah. True, yeah.
Next, we heard from Silver and Gold Podcast, which is at SNG Pod 4779, which is atomic numbers of silver and gold, if you don't know. Not many people do. But he said, Steve Fuggin' Ditko, who is the creator of Spider-Man and Doctor Strange and things like that with Stan Lee, who has walked away from comics, much like Spider-Man walked away from his costume and he's been...
Right. We then heard from Will Fish, at Will Fish on the Twitters, and he said, John J. Muth and James Jean, simply astounding artists.
Yeah, Muth, he did some Vertigo stuff that I recall really well, a painter mostly, and James Jean, he did author Fables covers, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to place James Jean's work.
Yeah, so right, just cover work mostly for James, but yeah, they're terrific talents. Next we heard from Aaron Long, and I wonder if this will be a serious answer. He said, that person that did Doom Patrol that you talked about that one time.
Right, so he's probably talking Arnold Drake or Bruno Premiani.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Who would know with Aaron?
No.
Joe Crawford at J3K_C said, if he's doing work, I'll feel bad, but Kyle Hotz.
Kyle Hotz, I remember him from being an artist on Nightman in the Ultraverse, and he has a really cool style. It's a bit reminiscent. You know how Jay Lee started with his early Image stuff? Kyle Hotz was a bit like that. So when he took over Nightman, the first thing he did was give Nightman a really ragged cloak with holes in it, a cape.
Okay.
And, yeah, really, you know, cool look. Yeah, I don't know what became of him or where into. I mean, I only saw him in the Ultraverse, but I'm sure he did lots of stuff after that. But, yeah, he was pretty cool. He was a great artist.
Cool.
Next we heard from Bob Buster at Bob Buster 3. There's two others. That's weird. Hey, Bob. I think Bob's new to answering your question.
Bob is new, yeah. Yes.
But he said if Jack Kirby was still alive and paid well, I would want to see what he could do. Yeah, that's great to have the King back working in comics.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him sort of get back involved with his old creations at DC, you know, do some more, some brand new New God stuff. That'd be terrific.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that'd be amazing to see what he would do these days.
Yeah.
Yes. And over on the Facebook page, Jared Driscoll replied with, Travis Charis. He was the reason I read any stuff from Wildstorm in the late 90s. He then half-completed a Meta Barons graphic novel and nothing.
Travis Charest, wasn't he? Oh, he did such good work for Wildstorm. I remember his very like earliest stuff for DC, which I think was mostly on Dark Stars, which was... But it was rough as guts. Like he had, you could see the formative artist he would become, but his early Dark Stars stuff wasn't quite fully formed. But I remember at the time it was like, whoa, this is different and cool, and we love it.
Awesome.
And next we heard from Dean Jones with just a late one that came in. I mean, one of the things about this question of the week was I didn't want to put it out just after a creator died. So we had this on the list. And then Darwin Cook died, and then so I took it off the list and moved it down the list to now. And, unfortunately, Len Wein, creator of Swamp Thing and Wolverine and so many other characters, he passed away this week, which was really sad. So Dean Jones said, Len Wein, rest in peace, with a sad face, which we agree with. So, yeah, I met Len at the Graphic Comic Festival at the Sydney Opera House a few years ago, the same one that I saw... Grant Morrison and Gerard Way at. So, yeah, I went to his panel and got his autograph and stuff. And was really disorganized and I didn't bring any of the right comics. So I was the guy who got him to sign Gunfire number one.
Right.
Gunfire, the amazing character who spun out of the Bloodlines event.
Every character that spun out of that was amazing, Paul. Come on.
You're so right. Yeah, so many amazing characters. So he signed my Gunfire number one. So, yeah, but he was charming and, you know, really you know, really entertaining and forthcoming and full of, you know, great stories. And, you know, some of his Watchmen stories were very entertaining. He was the editor of Watchmen when it was coming together. But, you know, it's interesting. So many people are in awe of Watchmen and Alan Moore. And, you know, he from Len Wein's perspective, it was just another job. And, you know, there are some things that he suggested that Alan wasn't crazy about. So, yeah. Alan Moore, difficult with people? Never.
Never. We then got an email from Robert Kelly over at the Fire and Water podcast. And he said, "Hi, fellas. In answer to this week's question, my answers are living David Mazzucchelli. I know he's still around doing comics, but he doesn't seem to do much. I wish he was a lot more prolific. And dead Alex Toth. He did such an amazing comics work. It's a shame he chose to do so little, considering how long his career was."
Wow, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, David Mazzucchelli, I think he does whatever he likes now because he's getting enough money from Batman Year One and things, but
okay.
Yeah, I read something by him, a graphic novel he did a few years ago, and it was amazing, but, you know, a long way removed from superhero comics as such.
Right.
Yeah, and that story would be better if I could name what it was. So, Mike, what about you? Have you got an answer for this one?
Yeah, again, I try to think of living people, but I just kept coming back to Darwin Cook. I love his art. That December that DC did the variant covers, or was it just the regular covers, were all by Darwin for their books towards the tail end of the New 52.
Yeah, they were variants.
They were variants, okay. That was like the best Christmas present from DC Comics. And of course, just anything that Darwin put his hand to, I loved the look of his artwork. You know, and it's just a shame he was taken from us last year and we won't get anything more from him. So...
yeah, so young, very tragic.
Mm. Yeah. How about you, Paul?
I keep flipping between people, but one name that keeps coming to my head is Paul Smith, who was a X-Men artist in the 80s. You and I probably know him best as the artist on Leave It to Chance.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, or Leave It to Chance if you went to a private school. But yeah, that was a creator-owned comic by James Robinson and Paul Smith. Excellent work. Came out of, I think it was Homage Comics and then sort of shifted over to DC, I think, or Image or something, somewhere. Anyway, moved
around. I think it was Image.
Image,
yeah.
Yes. But yeah, a terrific book. And it ended on a cliffhanger, and they released three hardcover oversized collections, which are all really nice. And they did one more issue, and that had, you know, a moment of, oh, what's going to happen next? And they never finished it. And I know James Robinson is keen to finish it, but he cannot get in touch with Paul Smith to get him to finish it with him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So just artist AWOL on that one. So, you know, I'd love to see that book back, and I'd love to see more collections of it, and I'd love to see it get its due, which is kind of difficult when it's unfinished. And, yeah.
But that was a great series. It really was.
It's excellent, wasn't it? And all the cool people had letters in that one, didn't they, Mike?
They sure did, Paul. We sure did.
Fist bump.
But yeah, I wish he could just find a different artist.
Well, he can't because he owns it with Paul. So,
Okay,
yeah,
right, there we go. Damn it, Smith.
Yeah. Anyway.
Gosh. Anyway.
Anyway, I think that's probably it for the Mailbag of Doom. Nothing left inside that I can see.
Okay. Well, on that note, we'll start signing off. Next time. I'm waiting for them. We're going to continue with our Rachel Pollack coverage, looking at issues 78 and 79, getting towards the end of the Tiresias Wars. And, Paul, what's our question of the week for the next episode?
The question of the week for the next episode is, who is the least stable hero in comics?
Mento.
Is he a hero, though, Mike?
Oh, sorry.
Is he a hero?
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, I have to think more about that.
He's the fifth richest man in the world. We can agree on that.
This is true. So, yes, that's it for this episode of Waiting for Doom. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks again, Paul. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you want to get in touch, you can reach out on Twitter at WFDpod. Say hi to Wilfred. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And don't forget to also check out Doug Zavisha's amazing site, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com.
Sweet. Well, thanks, Mike. It's been a good one.
Thanks, Paul. It has been. It has been. And we'll catch you all next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.
Just be aware your microphone's scratching or something.
So I've got a fuzzy beard at the moment. This mic is too close to my beard. Is that better?
That's a bit better.
Where are these?
Oh, no, that's not good. Jesus. Wow, that is a possible outtake. Okay, good to go?
I am.
Alrighty. Okay. Stop it! Fucker.
Yeah, so that's the question of the week, but what are we going to look at next episode? I'm glad you asked. We are going to look at Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issues 78 and 79, which are the next two in the Pollockorama. Yeah.
Which I just said.
Shit.
Anyway.
We need some sort of script to keep this on track, don't we?
Yeah, if only we had one. All right, I'll wrap it up. Hang on.
I'll wrap it up with you at the same time.
Will you? No. That won't be annoying at all.